Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. We're celebrating Easter in the midst of a global pandemic and sheltering in place. So in this episode, Greg Meyer shares his reflections on the Easter story in our current context. We expect that each of our takeaways are different, but we have resources for connecting with others in your life at fabricmpls.com. We're wishing you health and wholeness. Happy Easter.
Welcome to Easter Fabric. Yeah, this is probably a bit of a change for all of us. I mean, add Easter to your long list of things that are supposed to happen one way and aren't. I mean, so the sea of humanity, you've got you sitting there with your phone or your laptop and me upstairs in the bedroom that we raised our daughters in and my wife trying to kind of hide away and stay out of the way someplace in the house right now. Truth is, though, that if you want to make this kind of a little bit normal for Easter, you can make your house smell like pancakes. And if you got kids, you can get them on a sugar high with Easter candy, just like any year. But, yeah, maybe that's not where we want to go. You know, like all the things that are supposed to be one way and aren't, I'm hoping that you're discovering that Easter doesn't have to be the way that you've always pictured it. It's a good life lesson, and perhaps one that's a lot closer to the heart of Easter than appears at the surface. Now, here's what I'm talking about. Easter doesn't have to be, in fact, probably shouldn't be the way we've been trained to expect it to be, because we've done something kind of weird to Easter over the centuries. Now, if you're part of the Fabric community, this is probably something you appreciate, and if you aren't, it's probably something you ought to know. And that is that we don't look at days like this in a very conventional sort of way. And I'm not referring to the fact that we don't have an organ or choirs and robes and all the pageantry that might go with them. I mean, it's easy to not have stuff. We do something a little different. We ask the questions like, why be a community and what does this all mean? And we ask them tirelessly and insist on that whatever we come up with makes sense for us in the context of this world that is huge and diverse and always changing. And we try to do it not by coming up with answers, but better questions. So, you know, if you're having trouble with what typically gets served up on Easter or any time for that matter, or if you're just looking for more in it, then Fabric might be helpful to you. So we're glad you're here, listening, watching, whatever, welcome. Okay? All right, Easter. It all starts with this book, the Bible. Now, if you're uninterested in what the Bible has to say, I'm not surprised. I mean, the way most people use it seems to fall in the category of, this is not my reality. It relies on making experiences of people from a completely different culture and worldview thousands of years ago normative. And you probably find that neither relevant or believable. Now, to tell you the truth, it doesn't actually capture what those people back then were experiencing anyway. If that's you, and that's how you see it, you're part of a growing majority of people. Now, if you are interested in the Bible, you may be just used to hearing the Bible that way and stop asking whether it made sense to you or not, or if it accurately reflects what was happening those millions of years ago. I mean, you just plain grandfathered it in, so to speak, before you had a chance to decide if you really understood it or not. A lot of people come to me and tell me that that's exactly what they did for years or even decades, and they have no idea now what to do with the Bible since they've stepped away and are starting to look again. Now, there is another way to read this book. And it's time to look beyond the reading we've crafted for centuries to see what people might have been experiencing and what that says for us in our world today. And interestingly, Easter is a prime example, because when it comes to Easter story, there's something strikingly similar between what those first century people following this guy named Jesus were experiencing and what we are experiencing today. And there's something really profound, there's something meaningful, and there's something useful in that today. You see, the Easter story starts with a bunch of frightened people. I mean, their world has been turned upside down. They're anxious, they're afraid, they're hiding with their closest friends and their family behind locked doors. Does that sound familiar to you? Sure does to me. I mean, could just as well be talking about half the world's population on April 12th of 2020. Now, they, like many of us who are sheltering in place today, had been on a roll. I mean, times were changing in their favor. Then suddenly they weren't. Their worries were returning into realities. And the people who were part of Jesus' bandwagon weren't just losing what they believed in, but they were fearing for their lives and for their businesses and their jobs and their families. Something that could destroy them was spreading uncontrollably. And then Jesus, who's the heart of everything that's been driving all this, is arrested. And there's this ugly, nightmarish night, and by noon the next day, he's dead, and it is over. I mean, back to their houses, doors locked, fear, panic, uncertainty, the binge baking of matzah. I mean, can it get much worse? Okay, so that is strikingly similar to what we are experiencing today. But you say, like, so what? I mean, tragedies happen. Well, hang on. I think the similarity is important. Now, finally, a couple days later, under the cover of first light, some of the women decide to venture out from the locked doors, from their shelter in place, to do what is decent. I mean, they're going to prepare the body for burial. After all, it was just hastily stashed in an available tomb a couple days before that. And that is when they start discovering a different story. He lives. Now, hold the horse. Hold your horses here. This is a part of the typical Easter Sunday morning when the lights flash on, everyone shouts hallelujah, Jesus is alive, victory is won, and all that jazz with trumpets blaring and choirs singing. But that isn't what it was like back then. I mean, look at the story. Mary is in tears. She doesn't recognize Jesus outside of the tomb. Nobody recognizes him. The disciples walk into a mass, don't recognize him. Peter in his boat didn't recognize him or his voice. Thomas didn't believe it was him, even when he stood and talked to him until he was challenged to touch him. In fact, even as the story tells about Jesus ascending into heaven, it says that the disciples, his closest followers, gathered around him. Some of them believed and some doubted. And then they went back to their hiding behind locked doors, quarantined because of what they feared, despite what they might have seen. Now, this wasn't a matter of it really being Jesus, but strangely, no one could recognize him, which would be kind of weird, and you'd think someone would have kind of edited that out and cleaned up the script a little bit. No, this is in there, and it's in there for a reason. What seems to be going on here is that things were strangely clear, and they aren't. What had happened? What was different? What lived that everyone was sure had died was there among them? And it wasn't. Both at the same time. Two things that seem to be opposite are both real and they're true, all wrapped up in Jesus, dead and gone, and Jesus alive and present, somehow all blurred in the same moment. That's exactly where we are today. We're trying to live like everything is fine and normal, and in so many ways it is, but it's not. And we have to keep on living in this it's-not-fine world while simultaneously claiming as much hope and human dignity and normalcy as we have the capacity to create. And the story begs to get us out of this one or the other way of thinking. It's trying to show us the power of hope and reality held together. The question is not from the Bible, did it happen or didn't it? Did Jesus rise from the dead or not? The question is, how is what we love so much still alive, and how can we live as though it is? Face it, there have been 20 centuries since whatever happened, and there's still as much death as there is life around us. And if anyone is going to tell us that Jesus ended all that, I think we just have to say, huh? What Jesus was showing us is not that the bad stuff is all over, but that we can make live what is really important to us, what really matters, what we truly value, even though, while it lives, there is still some dying going on. That it is not only possible, that's the way it works. Easter is saying that what is worth living for doesn't go away. There can be roadblocks, there can be obstacles in the way, it is still worth living for. And that's what we have to do today. So, what do you want to be alive? This is my Easter invitation to you. Find some time today. Take out a piece of paper or your journal or notebook if you have one, and spend some time thinking and writing about this, even if it's only a couple minutes. Get started on this project, right? And the question is this: even in the midst of all this chaos, what do I want to be alive? In me, in my family, in my friends, in my world, and how do I make that live in and through me? Easter is saying that what is worth living for doesn't go away. I mean, there can be roadblocks and obstacles in the way, and it's still worth living for. you may not be able to find a way to do it perfectly, and it may not quite work out, it is still worth living for. That's what Jesus' followers did back then, and they transformed the world with it. They didn't make it perfect, and a lot of what they did got messed up by people after them, even though they thought they were doing the right thing. But they made the world be more about what was worth living for. And that is what we do today. So what do you want to be alive? Here's my Easter invitation to you. Find some time today. Get by yourself. Get that piece of paper out or your journal or notebook that you might already have and think about and write about this. Even in the midst of all this chaos, what do I want to be alive in me and my family and friends and my world? And how do I make that live in and through me? Even in the midst of all this chaos, what do I want to be alive in me and my family and friends and in my world? And how do I make that live in and through me? Spend some time with your answers and your answers to that question. Sharpen them. Drill down on them. Get familiar with them. What are they exactly trying to say? And then, how will you live so that it could be more true than it is right now? See, one of the powerful things about Jesus and what he did is that he not only showed what is truly worthy of our lives, but he showed how it makes a difference even when it doesn't get the big victory. In fact, maybe that really was a big victory that Jesus accomplished on Easter, that life isn't one or the other. It isn't win or lose, victory or loss, life or death, all or nothing. I mean, we can get together today or not get together, and we can still grow closer. We can have our economy decimated, our system strained to the breaking point by disease, and become a stronger nation. At the same time, we can be frightened and anxious over what to do and how to do it, and we can learn who we truly are at the same time. It isn't one or the other, all or nothing. Love doesn't have to be the only thing in the world for it to determine the direction of our lives and of our world. I want to share with you a short excerpt from a TED Talk by psychologist Susan David. She speaks about the same, not only possibility, but necessity of holding the yes and no of life together in terms of our emotions. The win, the cheeriness, the victory of emotional positivity, as well as the compromised, often defeated, sadness-ridden face of emotional reality. That would be equivalent of Easter that is all pastel and happy, everything is perfect now, battle won, and the Easter that has just enough energy maybe to crawl out from the tomb and live again, knowing it's going to face battle after battle, but does it because it believes, not in life without struggle, but in life in struggle. Listen to her words.
Research on emotional suppression shows that when emotions are pushed aside or ignored, they get stronger. Psychologists call this amplification, like that delicious chocolate cake in the refrigerator. The more you try to ignore it, the greater its hold on you. You might think you're in control of unwanted emotions when you ignore them, but in fact, they control you. Internal pain always comes out. Always. And who pays the price? We do. Our children, our colleagues, our communities. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not anti-happiness. I like being happy. I'm a pretty happy person. But when we push aside normal emotions to embrace false positivity, we lose our capacity to develop skills to deal with the world as it is, not as we wish it to be. I've had hundreds of people tell me what they don't want to feel. They say things like, I don't want to try because I don't want to feel disappointed. Or I just want this feeling to go away. I understand, I say to them, but you have dead people's goals. Only dead people never get unwanted or inconvenienced by their feelings. Only dead people never get stressed, never get broken hearts, never experience the disappointment that comes with failure. Tough emotions are part of our contract with life. You don't get to have a meaningful career or raise a family or leave the world a better place without stress and discomfort. Discomfort is the price of admission to a meaningful life.
Choose to be part of the world of the living. I mean, if all Easter means is that the struggle is over, then I'm sorry, but I'm out. But if it means, if Jesus being alive, while no one is quite sure, if that is a sign that what is worth living for is still worth living for, even when you can't quite make it out, even when it's fraught with complications and setbacks and uncertainty, well, then sign me up, because that's where life, the very best of it, always lives. So we've got this question. What do you want to live in the world? And how can you make it live in and through you? Now, I'd be willing to bet that as you take on that question and start digging deeply into it about what you want to have live in your world, you're going to find that some of the people in your life come to mind. Maybe it's because of how precious and loved they are. Maybe it's because your relationship with them is, shall we say, problematic. Maybe it's because they're both. And that may sound a little bit funny, but you and I both know that people tend to have those two categories together a lot of the time. When we dig down deeply into what we want to be alive, we end up seeing the faces of people. Because sooner or later, life comes down to relationships. It's not the money, it's not the stuff, it's not the experiences, it's the people. Now, right now, you're struggling with a lot of things. You're trying to stay healthy with social distancing, you're caring for people under unusual circumstances, you're trying to figure out how to do your job from home, how to handle losing your job or the income from it. These are all necessary and they're important. But even they boil down to relationships. If that is going on, all those kinds of challenges are happening in your life and you're surrounded with healthy relationships, you're going to find your way through the worst of these parts of your life. It may not be pretty, it may not turn out the way you wished it would have, but you're going to find your way through. Without those relationships, well, you're hurting already. And even the smallest obstacles of this current season are going to be insurmountable. It all comes down to relationships. That's what Jesus was driving at. That's what the people surrounding him knew. Matthew, one of the outsiders that Jesus brought into relationship with himself and with others, he got this to such an extent that when he wrote his story of Jesus' life, we call it the Gospel of Matthew, he started it all by saying that Jesus' name would be Emmanuel, which means God with you. And then he ended it with Jesus reminding us, I will be with you always. I mean, Jesus' brilliance as a speaker of truth and compassion, that was amazing. His ability to heal and to bring change were remarkable. But what was most important was that he was with us. It all comes down to relationships. So, how are your relationships? For some of us, it's the isolation. For others, it's being trapped with each other too long. For many of us, it's both. And that wonderful me time, that family or couple time has turned from a gift into a sentence, but studies have shown that these times of crisis, like we're in right now, they take a toll on most relationships. They increase divorce rates, they decrease satisfaction with working relationships, they make us less tolerant of each other. But some relationships become remarkably better in stressful times like this. And both of those scenarios are probably happening right now in our world around us. So how do you move your relationship into that latter category, not the first? That's what we're going to be talking about starting this next week, relationships that work. There's no magic. There's no special quality that those people have that others don't. It's not about creating a perfect relationship either. No, it's about holding the vision and the reality together. And there's some practices that you and I can use to do that. And it's never too late. This is true for your relationship with your partner, for others in your family, your friends, for people at work, whoever and wherever. So if your notes about what you want to be alive ends up with people on the list, then know that those relationships are being challenged today, and you can use this time to make them all stronger. So join us next week and the weeks following. What better way to claim life for this world than to do it with the people that you love and that you share this world with? Happy Easter. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Keep this conversation going with the people in your life. Share this podcast and resources. If you're looking to support this work financially, go to fabricmpls.com/give. A 5-star rating and review will also help others find us. Thanks again.